Hey folks, welcome back to Shoot Side. I'm your host, Ferris Simon. Good to be back. And believe it or not, we actually have a guest today. And that guest is Mr. Brandon Callis. But before I give him his intro, I want to thank our sponsors over there at SC Online Sales for being the title sponsor for the back half of season three of Shoot Side. SC Online Sales was established in 2013 when co-founders Dave Geyer and Roland Shoemaker recognized the opportunity to take online livestock sales to the next level. And after investing 18 months of blood, sweat, tears, and capital building a custom sales platform from the ground up, SCO hosted its first online sale in the fall of 2014. And what started as a dream sketched out on a notepad has grown to a team of 30 talented employees with sales reps located all across the country. While their innovative sales platform that is very user-friendly and works on your cell phone better than anything else in the market is certainly an asset, what really sets SCO apart is their team culture and commitment to customer service. And I can attest to that personally. I've bought and sold on this platform, and it's my favorite one to operate on. Because of these things, SCO has truly fulfilled its mantra of becoming the place to be for online livestock auctions. Regardless of species, they too do semen sales, fulfillment, junior fair livestock auctions and add-ons. The list literally goes on. Every step of the way, when you're dealing with SCO, whether it's booking your sale, submitting information, collecting settlement, or settling up on a purchase you made, the SCO team is dedicated to their customers, and I think that's what makes them so great. Visit sconlinesales.com today to view the upcoming sales, or if you have something to sell, book your next online sale. It all happens here, literally. Brandon is coming back, and I'm grateful that he came back on to the episode. If you listen to the last episode we released, that kind of teased up this episode just a little bit. So if you haven't listened to that one, I would suggest listening to that one. And then tune it into this one, because I think there's some similarities. And this is, I don't want to say this is part two, but it's kind of building off some of the topics we talked about last time, just a little bit there in the front half. Brandon is a 2005 graduate of Texas A&M University. He had his master's degree in animal breeding and genetics at K-State. And he and his wife, Kelly, and their family operate BKC Livestock located in Minco, Oklahoma. And they run around 90 head of Simmental-influenced cows and club calf-producing cows. In addition to being a rancher and addicted to livestock evaluation, as he puts it, he had coached at K-State, Blinn, and Redlands Community College for around 15 years. In his words, he is a child of God, absolutely loves what he does, and the opportunity to meet people along life's journey. As I said in last week's episode, or 2 weeks ago, whenever this happens there, but the last episode I did, Brandon is a great human being. I consider him a good friend, and I'm very fortunate that he agreed again to come on this podcast and share some thoughts. We had a little bit of technical difficulties in the beginning, and really what those technical difficulties were is after 3 years of doing this podcast, I can't figure out how to properly hook my mic up to the computer. So for about the first 2 minutes, I'm going to sound kind of quiet. And after that, I figure out how not to be a hammerhead and get my mic working correctly. So apologies for that. But without wasting any more time, let's get right into the episode. Let's go Shoot Side with Brandon Callis.
Well, folks, you might have thought this day would never come. I actually have a guest on with us, Mr. Brandon Callis. Thank you for joining Shoot Side for the second time.
It's my pleasure. I'm an avid listener and enjoy it. So, no, it's an honor to be asked again.
Well, this episode is maybe a little bit connected to the last one I did last week, or maybe 10 days ago now by the time this episode airs. But you were an inspiration for me to release the last one. I talked to you about the last one before we released it, before I even had that discussion with myself. And some of the items we're going to talk about today were actually some ideas that you brought up to me in other discussions. And last week, I talked about alone, just kind of a post-show analysis and having that comfort to discuss and be objective about the cattle, some that I brought to the show, some that my colleagues and competitors brought to the show. Interestingly enough, and I haven't shared this with you, had a lot of positive feedback to that episode, but also some people that maybe questioned my comfortableness with the way things went down as far as the placing of my cattle versus the others and then my true opinion of them. And it reminded me, I guess it made sense to have this discussion that we're going to have, which is kind of the promotion of positive post-show discussion and how you and I think that needs to be more of a normal thing. You kind of want to take it from here on where you hypothetically, what would be ideal after the show and breaking down the cattle, whether it's competitor to competitor or evaluator to competitor, and what that might look like in a perfect world?
I think post show conversations are awesome. I might be one of the few that doesn't mind them after a show, but I guess I'm always real comfortable with my process and how I do things that I feel like I don't have to defend myself. I just like talking about stock after the show. And so anytime we can positively talk about differences, and that's another probably misconception or thing that, you know, I know my opinion is not the only one, and it's not always going to be the right one. So I enjoy seeing different viewpoints, especially of the livestock, and getting to discuss those with folks. And I don't know, it's something kind of therapeutic about it. There's some closure, especially with friends and things, especially if they don't do well. It's just another way of being able to talk through it. So I guess I enjoy it. Don't mind it at all.
But to take that further, there's a right way and there's a wrong way, right? And I think sometimes, and I've been guilty of this, and we had this chat or part of this chat the other night when we're sharing the same vehicle, that I'm guilty of going about it the wrong way at times. I've been the guy that's emotionally charged and upset, and let's face it, we are competitors. But mm-hmm. That's not the right way to go about it. If I would have came up to you after this show and put my finger in your chest and say, how come you use my calf? That was wrong or whatever. That wouldn't have been the right way to have this conversation. The same way is it not the right way to have this conversation with your colleagues at the show of, hey, your calf sucked. That's not realistic or appropriate either.
No, not at all. And I guess I try to gauge the person or gauge the room, so to speak. And if I can tell they're pretty heat, I let the smoke blow off. And if it's a week later, we discuss things, or if it's, you know, an hour later, whatever it may be, I let things kind of die down before we get after it. If I think it's going to be confrontational. But for the most part, most people just want to know, want a little extra confirmation about how things went. And so most of the time it's pretty positive.
Yeah. I find personally that, if you wait a few days, maybe, or a couple hours at minimum, but a few days to kind of let the endorphins and the adrenaline get out of your system, it's usually a more productive conversation than right there when the Band-Aid gets ripped off. And let's face it, I mean, you grew up in this business. Your kids are showing now. There's nothing like that feeling where you're leading the calf to the ring and the dice are kind of out there on the table. You know, there's a lot of drama, a lot of pomp, a lot of circumstance. So to have these discussions, I think you need to mm-hmm. be objective and calm and let some of that excitement maybe wear off.
Yep.
From what occurred.
Exactly. And if you're a competitor at all, and you don't accomplish the end goal or what you're trying to do, I expect you to have just a little bit of angst or just be a little upset, because If not, you didn't bring the right calf to the show. You didn't bring one you believed in. So I almost expect it. But at the same time, if we're truly all going to, you know, kind of get along in this system and have respect for each other, you know, at some point in time, we should be able to talk about it like reasonable people and it not escalate off either end, the judge's end or the exhibitor.
Another topic that you previously brought up or thought that we could talk about on this episode is the concept of, if you're the evaluator and I know you and I'm at the show with a calf, that it's almost taboo for us to have any sort of friendly interaction. Of course, we're not going to talk about the cattle, but it's kind of this, we have to pretend like we don't know each other. Someone like you or even myself that's been around for a while, you longer than me, no offense, you know a lot of people, and we go for the interactions with people, and it's kind of like an interesting dichotomy. Would you like to further expand on your thoughts there?
I'm often envious of the pig industry from this standpoint of, it seems like those guys can conversate, can hang around each other, but yet still step in the ring. And from a public perspective or outsiders looking in, nobody's pointing fingers. Nobody's saying, hey, trying to connect the dots ahead of time. It's just those guys are allowed to be a part of their industry, be a breeder, be a colleague, but yet still be trusted to judge those shows. And for some reason in our cattle ring, we're almost forced to act like we're enemies. Because if not, people start to point the fingers and all those kind of things. And so we almost have to go over and beyond to act like we don't know each other, just to keep it, I guess, as professional as the public would like to see it.
Yeah, and furthermore, in terms of a list of things to be envious about the show pig industry, it's not uncommon, and we saw it here last weekend with Kelton Mason and Troy Sloan judging the Indiana State Fair, that guys that raise barrows and sell barrows, and they do that for a living, get to judge those shows, and it's kind of... It's not looked down upon, and we don't see that very often in the showster business. And I wish we got to see more of that.
I do think it's the next big thing for us cattle folks. As far as, I think slowly but surely, show officials are starting to realize, or we're starting to run out of collegiate people to judge these things, I guess. But they're starting to realize that maybe the best people to judge a showster show or some of those that either sell them for a living or breed them. I think that model has worked awesome with the pigs. And you see it almost in every species, to be honest, except for the cattle. You know, and there's a lot of guys that don't raise show steers. I think they do an awesome job judging fat steer shows, but there's not a doubt in my mind, you know, there's a really good select group of elite people, that I think that are in and that live the steer game, that would do one heck of a job. And we're starting to see them. They're starting to show up slowly but surely. But I do think it's going to push on, and that's going to become a little more popular in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And to build on your statement, I think it happens in every species, every arena, except for the show steer, particularly the showster arena. I think you said the cattle arena, but on the breeding cattle side, it's not uncommon to have an Angus breeder judge a national Angus show. And it's actually something that it seems that the breeds look forward to have one of their own judge the show. And who would know those cattle better than someone from within your own realm that understands how to raise those? So I would echo your sentiments that I would hope that we begin to see that over the next 5 or 7 years. I'm encouraged to have my peers and those that I respect in this business have opportunities to judge those shows, because as you know, you raise show steers, you've been around it your whole life. They're hard to raise. And I think by raising them, feeding them, selling them, you gain additional perspective and additional data points that you otherwise would not have.
Oh, all day long. Again, it just makes sense when you've been in the trenches and here we are fall calving right now. And I mean, yeah, we got show steers. They're not the most productive animal out there as far as calving difficulties and things, but it's still what we decide to do. And it's a challenge, or can be. And so having somebody that understands the work it took to get from point A to point Z, it just makes you feel better about doing it when they actually have some skin in the game.
I would agree. So I misread, I guess, or I misprepared for you at the Youth Expo. We've talked on here before that you live on Muscle Island and we're neighbors out there on Muscle Island. And while you didn't take light muscled cattle by any means, you still took powerful cattle. You mentioned something after the show that I was unaware, that you've kind of become more of a structure aficionado, if you will, rather than Muscle Island resident. I think you still have an address there, but maybe you're only living there part-time. Can you yeah. break that down a little bit for us on why you've made that move?
You know, in this show steer deal, I would say that we've gotten to a point, especially on the top end of these cattle, where I find less and less of my decisions that I have to dictate because of muscle. You know, early on, you could, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it still made a big difference. But now I think a lot of people are breeders, and I'll give the breeders the kudos. We've gotten a lot of powerful, wide built cattle that actually have some chest width and a rib cage and a big back and some hip. And to me, the next thing is now let's fix their skeleton to where, they can still function with all that, and still set and go. And so, yeah, I probably, and honestly, since my kids now show steers and we've been feeding them, to me, that's the hardest thing to link together and keep put together on an elite. If you want to be elite, is keeping the right kind of build with those animals without sacrificing the extras in terms of muscle, especially. And so I have noticed just myself, if I see a recording of a show, or actually my son will point out every now and then, it's like, man, you got to have them get built for you. And I guess I kind of do. And probably, I guess my wife put it best. It's, I like functional width. I like stout cattle. They don't always have to be just the shapeliest thing, but boy, they got to be built wide and square, but it got to get and go in the right manner as well. And so I've kind of morphed to that, I guess. And I probably blame it on starting to raise a lot more of them now. I see how all of it kind of comes together.
Do you think by taking that approach, and it's maybe my opinion that we're seeing the depth at some of these major steer shows not be what it used to be, while the top end is really, really challenging. Do you think if we continue to focus on build, or I say shift our focus a little bit more to build, we can bring some of that depth back that we saw maybe 10 years ago?
I think, honestly, I think breeders and feeders will have to think more endpoint driven instead of right now. We've gotten our bull battery and we've gotten these calves so good from 3 to 6 months, that out in the pasture running around, we look like we've got them as good as we ever have. We probably do. And the problem comes from the time that calf's purchased to the time it feeds. I think it's a mixture of genetics. We've bred a lot of quit into these cattle to where they kind of shut down and don't grow. That's where I would say the holdovers have kind of taken over because of that. But then also, it's become a little more complicated to feed them just because there's so many options out there, what you can feed them and what it does, that I think we're so, I guess, human nature. Let's try everything and see what works perfect instead of staying consistent with something. And so I think the end result of that comes out to a fat steer show where there's just not a whole lot of depth there because of it.
You bring up a point that I didn't consider. You know, in my head, I'm thinking, hey, we should have more depth because of the feeding options and all the technology out there. Your argument's almost the opposite of there's so much technology and so much options, it almost overcomplicates things. And I guess I'm probably in that camp of, hey, I like to be kind of basic with my feeding strategy, but I never considered your point, but I think there's a lot of validity to it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the good football teams, look at the good basketball teams, look at the good feeders. They do the simple things the most consistent, and they do them correctly. They become perfectionists about the everyday mundane things. But I think as human nature, we get bored with the mundane, and so we want to see the fringe, we want to see the extra. And I think because of that, man, it's so enticing to, you know, feed this, feed that. Hey, they say this is going to do this. And so we've got 15 bags of feed there, and really the basic model will probably do.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, and even within textured feeds, I think simple is better, you know, and you don't need 1,000 different supplements. And this is off topic perhaps, but I'm not a believer in 1,000 different supplements and this, that, and the other. I'd say identify simple things that you think work that you can do consistently and you can execute, and take good care of the animal. Watch them, be persistent, and provide really premium care for those cattle. And I think you'd get a lot. There's no silver bullet. There's nothing out there that's going to get you a W without effort.
No, I agree. I'm guilty of it. You know, our first year, that first year we had it, we kept it simple because we didn't know any other way to be. He turned out pretty good. Obviously, with the COVID thing, we didn't get to finish showing him, but we were very happy and pleased with the way that calf turned out. Well, then year two came along, and boy, we said, hey, we're really gonna try to figure this deal out. And we changed feeds, and we fed this, we fed that, and tried to react to everything he was doing. And the longer and longer I was thinking about things, well, he's reacting to all the different things I'm giving him. So he's reacting to it just right. But the problem is I'm shoving, you know, 10 different things and expecting it all to kind of gel together, and it just didn't. So I became a poor feeder by trying to figure out the perfect way to do things. And so we took it back and dialed it back again this year, and we're keeping it basic again.
Let's go back to what we were talking about as far as your shift to build and the importance of build. We talked in other podcasts this season, and I think maybe the last time you're on, about build and power and show heifers, and you raise Simmentals in addition to show steers. Are you taking that same approach on your seed stock division, or do you have a different approach on that side of your cow herd?
No, our approach is the same. My wife and I have always had this goal to take the same basic kind of cow and almost be old school breeders. I can, you know, flush her to In God We Trust, Here I Am, and get a desired result. I can flush her to, you know, Broker or Copacetic or some of these, you know, leading relentless semi bulls and get a result that I'm wanting there that represents my Simmental side. And so we try to make a animal that can affect our herd in lots of different ways. So our philosophy really hadn't changed. It's can we keep them functionally wide, but boy, put the best feet and legs on them that we can, because what we've learned is you can foul up structure real quick. And if the cow doesn't have the right foundation, you're shooting blanks. And so we really, really strive to have, whether it's a one that's going to raise steers or one that's going to, you know, raise Simmentals, for us, functional with the right kind of foot shape and a skeleton that's flexible and athletic. That's kind of that's our building block.
So would you say that you would almost describe, because what I heard you say is you almost don't have two divisions. You just have what I would consider versatile cows that can kind of do both.
Yeah, that's Yeah, that's our goal. We don't have enough of them to try to split things, and it's gotten us in trouble. Again, like we discussed in the last podcast, sometimes our cattle were getting called too stout or too much, and so it gets in trouble a little bit that way. But I guess our philosophy was, man, how can it be too much if it's still, you know, one of the sounder, if not the soundest animal in the class, or one of the more athletic ones there? Then how can you really call it too much if it's still functioning the right way? And so we don't feel like we're 100% there. We don't feel like we'll ever create the perfect animal, but man, we like what's coming along with the philosophy we've had probably.
Yeah, I would agree with that. As far as one being too much, if at least on the female side of things, I like to look at them as what is, and maybe even on the show steers too, now that I think about it, but what is the best combination or most ideal combination of width, power, and structural integrity, you know, because those things are relative. You know, if one is sounder structured, but also doesn't have any muscle, that's maybe not practical or useful either, at least in my opinion. Of yep. course, there's someone else that has a different program, a different scenario, that maybe they have more use for those, and I respect that and I get that. But to me, the challenge always is maximizing structural integrity, kind of like you said, while also making them wide and powerful. And it's interesting to hear you, because I didn't know that you're utilizing essentially the same cow base to do two different things.
Yeah, we've got a 3/4 blood cow. We call her Boss Lady. Named her that as soon as she was about 3 months old. Just she had a different build and she kind of fit us. And she's a 3/4 blood semi. And I would say she has become the nucleus of our herd. She's a grand dam of a bred gnome my son's had a little success with here lately. But yet she's put about four or five steers in the sale at, you know, Houston and San Antonio. Even had one show at Fort Worth, was 11th in the tough class at Fort Worth. So it's one of those deals. We try to find cows like her that can send us, no matter what we breed her to, in a desired way, the way we're wanting to go.
And you're of the opinion, you know, there's an interesting, we're going to talk more about genetics here. That's the direction I'm going.
Yep.
We've had some of these discussions. You know, there's two different kind of schools of thought right now. There's the thought that, at least on show steers, that they need to be revved up bred, hot blooded, club calf on club calf. There's a lot of people I know that are successful and subscribe to that belief, and they like to feed those cattle. They like to raise those cattle. There's others on the other opposite end of the spectrum where they think their cows need to be cold blooded, ice cold maternal bred, like to feed those, like to raise those. There's some of us that are in the middle. I think I'm in the middle. I think you've talked about before having some level of purebred in there. I mean, kind of mm-hmm. where you're at now that your kids are feeding them, you've grown as a breeder and evaluator. I mean, where are you landing on that spectrum?
I'm probably a little more center, but as far as like, I do believe the, just talking about the club calf deal, the ones that end up producing those steers that actually feed, but then also on the flip side, the daughters that you don't mind keeping, are those that to me have a quarter blood, some purebred in, whether it be Angus, Semi, Charlet, Maine, whatever, you know, a quarter, even to a half. I think it provides more consistency with those cattle. And it provides, I guess the big difference or big advantage I see, those things actually feed. Like, you can rely on those to get to a marketable weight when it comes fat steer time, and without a lot of the, man, we were almost there, man, boy, you know, close on structure, you find that those cattle there just have a lot more doability to them, to me, when they have a quarter. And I got that philosophy, honestly, from hog breeders. Back kind of where I grew up and people I was around, those hog breeders always talked about raising a good crossbred, that, yeah, you could go cross on cross, but in one, you know, one out of the 10 in that litter would maybe turn out, but why not go, you know, something with a half or a quarter, York or Hamp or whatever you have in there, and why not have, you know, 3/4 of the litter turn out instead of just one? And so I think that's where we are too with the steers. You've got that, the mentality of, hey, let's get 10 different crosses in here because those are the hairiest, the cool carriers, the longest neck ones. We're just going to roll the dice for the one. Or you have people that maybe have a little more of a productive mindset and would love to sell several for a solid price instead of just the one.
Yeah. And the whole feedability issue of it, I like that. If they don't win the show, I still like the calf to get to an appropriate weight and go try to win a class or you know, not be something I'm embarrassed of. I guess that's why in my own program, we always err on the side of a good built, maybe a little bit plainer, rather than freaked out and not sound enough, which that's just my own personal preference. That's the cattle I like. That's the way I learned. That's the way we kind of grew up picking them and liking them. And those were the ones we fed. I will say we do have a cow that is club calf bred that works real good to club calf bulls. And actually more than one, I mean, one here or there, but it almost seems, and this is still kind of a rudimentary thought process I'm working through that I kind of started last year, and I'm still trying to provide enough data for it to make sense in my head. But if you're going to have one that's hot-blooded as a cow, she better be very, very good and almost exactly what you want, because naturally the genetics are going to be more inconsistent. So, like, they don't breed as true to their pieces, I don't think, as a colder-blooded one, right? Like a Maine Angus, I think she's going to be really breed really true to her pieces. Like, oh, yeah, she doesn't have enough belly, and she's a little flat fore-ribbed, but where you can breed around that, and she will consistently breed those pieces. Whereas due to the additional inconsistency in the club calf genetics, if – like you're adding another wild card, like another randomization level in there. So they better be really, really good, because it's harder to just breed them off like the pieces of their look, it seems like.
Oh, I totally agree. That's definitely what my experience has taught me. And again, my frustration probably with the way we breed them, and I have to tell myself it's really not a frustration, but it kind of is being a competitive person. You see all the high sellers, and you want a little bit of that love. You want a little bit of that cake as well, but you don't always get them. I mean, we sell them good and we sell them decent, but, you know, we're probably not knocking them off like some of the top ones are on that top end necessarily, because we probably don't come with as much hair right off the bat. We don't come maybe with as much freak right off the bat. But again, where I guess, and it all goes back to our philosophy, where we pride ourselves is, man, there's a lot more of ours that seem to turn out. We don't have a lot of throwaways at all, type of deal. So I guess that's probably what we're the most proud of right now, but it is fun to get the big check at the front side too. Not going to lie.
Yeah, it's exciting, but I would argue that for most of us, I feel like I'm in this category. I feel like you're in this category. To get that really big check, it's almost kind of like winning a show, where you kind of need a unique set of circumstances to come together, the right bidders, the right calf, the right day, the sun needs to be at the right point in the sky, and then something kind of magical happens to get that calf to bring real high.
Oh yeah,
that's at least my experience. To build on that point, for those of us in that set of circumstances, I feel like to go and try to go hardcore club calf on club calf, you better know that you're able to consistently sell at least one or two of those high to really high to make up for your misses, because you're gonna have misses. And the misses on the club calf on club calf, those are unsaleable cattle, in my opinion. Whereas the misses on what you're talking about or what I'm talking about, I still can sell those cattle as county fair calves. Yes, I'm not going to get the $50,000 one, but my average is going to be a higher percent of saleable cattle. If I'm going to go swing for the fences and try to get that one out of 100, that one sale price better be paying for all the other ones that did not work out in my favor, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. That embryo cost is the same, whether he was a high seller or whether he went to the sale barn or wasn't even good enough to go to the sale barn. That embryo cost or that recip cost, the cost to raise that one was the same. And so, yeah, that if you go down that road, you better sell the one for mega bucks to cover the rest.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. You better be able to count on the fact that you can sell them for retail plus. And know that you can sell them for retail plus. Otherwise, I think it could get a little bit more challenging and a little more complicated. I wasn't expecting this to be a really long episode. Do you have anything you want to plug or anything else that you think we need to talk about?
No, man, just I say keep doing what you're doing. I enjoy these. I like the metamorphosis of what you started with and how it's kind of morphed in what you're doing. Just you're letting the podcast build itself pretty much. And man, I enjoy watching the journey of that. And my son here tells me I need to plug our sale. There in October and November, we'll have two online sales, mostly heifers this year. So
that'll be on SC online sales.
Yeah. Yep, it'll be SC. First part of October will be one of them for the ones that are ready early, and then we're going to do a set of younger ones there in November.
Well, Brandon, you made me blush by the kind comments you made about the podcast, and I appreciate that. And as always, I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate your listenership and your support. Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your listenership as always. If you want to make contact with us, shootsidepodcast@gmail.com. You can message us on social media. Shootside Podcast is the Instagram and Facebook handles. And if you like what you're hearing, give us a review on your favorite listening platform. Again, thank you guys. And thank you to Brandon for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.